No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008, or Skype us at DBSRADIOONE. This week, we have a very exciting guest. I really want to talk to this guy. I think that this is one of the most interesting people we've had in a while. His name is Ken Ferber, and he is a volunteer at a wolf sanctuary. And the work he does is not only about conservation, but it's about using the wolves to teach children important life lessons. So I find that very interesting. I can't wait to talk to him. Let me tell you that not much is going on here as far as D.C. statehood goes and our continuing battle for equality. So we're going to move right to Ken, and then later Marie and I are going to talk about some of the stuff that's been going on politically. Ken, are you there?
I am. And I must tell you, Senator, I went to GW back in the day, and I'm amazed. I'm amazed the statehood issue is still going on.
Yeah. And you know what? My sister graduated from GW. It's a great school. They're very supportive. We have a chapter of students for DC statehood at GW.
That's wonderful.
So we love GW. Yeah. But tell us what you do, Ken. I find it so interesting.
Well, Wolf Connection, I got involved in Wolf Connection actually through my daughter, who is what you would call a wolf whisperer, meaning that she has that unique ability, which I don't, to actually get her energy level down to the point that she can work with the animals. The thing about wolves is a lot of misconceptions, and if we can just spend a minute or two on that, it would really be helpful. Because obviously, and I'm not going to blame Disney and Warner Brothers cartoons for 100 years of Big Bad Wolf. But that is unfortunately a lot of what people think. And wolves are probably the most important animal in our ecosystem right now. And they have this unique ability, and the native tribes around the world have known this. They do have this healing power that they've used them as animals in these environments for thousands and thousands of years. We actually took most of our society from the wolf. The wolf is the original family in the animal kingdom that humans took that from, the alpha, the omega. They also created the first living environment where you actually had a cave and you had a tribe. So we take all that. There's a lot of Native American spirit involved, but we take it into a more contemporary point of view. And what Wolf Connection does, in addition to rescuing these animals from the most horrific experiences you can imagine of abuse, and they are rehabilitated and they are trained as a program animals, and the populations we work with are some of the most desperate populations you could see. These are primarily, we've got teenagers that are coming out of what's called an expulsion school out here. I think when I was growing up, it was called reform school. These are kids that had nothing in their lives. These are kids whose parents abused them and they have been wards of the state for years. And we work with drug and alcohol treatment centers. And we work with any population that needs that kind of healing power. And it's really remarkable. The schools that we work, these are public schools we have contracts with and major treatment centers that you would know about. So they are very effective in everything they do.
Ken, are all the wolves that are at Wolf Connection rescue wolves, or are some from the wild that just you stumbled upon, or how is it that you get your population?
Well, that's a great point. I mean, there is one ranger who was, you want to use the word stumbled, ranger was found walking down the streets of Sacramento, California, and nobody knows where it came from. But the overwhelming majority are rescues. There is a network of wolf sanctuaries around the nation that does talk. We talk to each other. We get calls from each other to see what we can do. Obviously, the need far exceeds the ability, because unlike a lot of rescue animals in terms of the facilities, these are animals that need to have 24-hour care. The licensing to care for them is very strict, as you can imagine. So the number of hours that's involved in rescuing a wolf is very substantial.
And why don't you share with us what the compound is like? Sorry, Michael, because the wolf is kind of unique in how you're set up.
Well, I'm going to give you some really exciting news that that hasn't been announced yet, is that we are now groundbreaking. We're going to be starting to move into our new ranch in May. And this is a brand new facility for us. We're going from 33 acres to 165 acres, this beautiful ranch in the Antelope Valley of California. We're going to have the ability to triple the number of animals that we rescue. We're going to be able to triple the number of programs that we do simultaneously. The animals will be living in spacious kennels, and I mean spacious. Each of them are going to have their very own kennel. We're going to be paired up with animals that they're friends with. There's going to be running areas, and more importantly, the programs are going to be able to be done. As you heard from the populations we work with, these are all confidential populations. So we could, on our current ranch, we could only do one program at a time and then wait for them to leave till the other program comes in. But now, because this is on three levels, it's actually in the national forest. It is completely isolated. It's just a beautiful facility. It's actually a facility, Maria, that was used for many years as a movie animal ranch for large movie animals. So if you saw, we bought a zoo or anything where an elephant or a giraffe or a rhinoceros was needed, this is the ranch that they came from. So it's kind of set up already, but there's a tremendous amount of difference between having a rhinoceros and having a wolf, particularly when you're dealing with the fact that we are taking teenagers who are young and immature at some point, and putting them together with these animals. So it's very exciting. We're going to be starting the process to move in May. We've been working on this for 2.5 years.
Congratulations. That's wonderful.
Yeah, and that's wonderful. I mean, I'm sure that they make a real connection with kids. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but they are the first cousin of man's best friend, right?
Right.
I am the proud owner of the biggest, dumbest Labrador Retriever in Washington, D.C., and we've always had dogs in my family, and one of the reasons is you know, I love animals, but I've always felt that they give so much to the family. You know, all my kids are connected to the dog. In fact, if they kiss me as much as they kiss the dog, I'd be a happy guy. You know, they all connect with, and I think just there's so much that kids can learn from animals. Isn't that true?
That's true. Let me make a very, you're bringing up a very interesting point. And by the way, I grew up with a black lab as well. And I know, and I've met some of Maria's dogs as well. So they are amazing. The difference here, though, and the thing that really has to be stressed, is wolves are not dogs. Yes, they are. The wolf is the dominant gene in all canine animals. But I could just say the very big difference between a wolf and a dog is that in most cases, a dog is going to be friendly toward a person. They're going to be approachable from a person. The wolf wants nothing to do with people whatsoever. We are their only natural enemy. And wolves are very shy. That's why there's actually, you know, the shy wolf concept is actually true. They don't want to be around people. It's part of the things that we have to do at Wolf Connection is to get them acclimated. When I was talking earlier about the energy, and the energy is a huge issue with the wolf because they can sense everything. So you need to get your energy down. And when we take some of these kids, I mean, these kids who've grown up in crack houses and such like that, teaching them in over a period of weeks to get them to the point that the animal will approach them, that's a big win. And that's where the connection comes in. And that's why it's called Wolf Connection, because we want them to connect with the animals, understanding, though, the animal does not inherently want to connect with them.
Ken, I know that you talk about wolf etiquette. Can you share with us what that means?
Wolf etiquette is basically how you are around the animals. And again, it just goes back to the fact that, you know, we have a community hike that we do every month, and we invite the public to come join us, and we take a couple of the animals up on a hike, and there's plenty of kissing time and photograph time, and there's cuddling time with the animals. But there's a way to approach them, and there is a way to respect them, because at the end of the day, they are wild animals. And you see this with a lot of animals, you know, in that are used in movies and such, that you think they're cute. Wolves, these are wild animals, and they always have to be treated that way with respect. And one of the big differences, Senator, compared to your Labrador Retriever, where you'll take the dog and pet him on the head, you never, ever put anything over a wolf's head. That's their threatening place. So if you want to pet them, you actually rub them on their chest, around their neck and their chest area. That's where they feel safe. They can look down on you.
As far as the funding goes, Ken, with Wolf Connection and the other sanctuaries, how does that work?
Well, I can't speak for the other sanctuaries, but at Wolf Connection, these programs that we run, these are done by contracts, either with the school system or with the private alcohol drug treatment centers. And then the majority of the other money that comes in is all through fundraising. And, you know, right now we're doing one of the most expensive things we have to do is unfortunately one of the things that everybody has to do eventually with an animal, which is medical care. And so we have the medical care for the animals. There aren't many veterinarians around that are going to be working with these animals. We have a wonderful collection of them, but obviously it's going to be expensive. So we do outreach, but there's also the ability, and this is where it comes in, the ability to sponsor a wolf. We have this at wolfconnection.org. And you can really take, you know, a wolf under your guidance and support them for whatever period of time you feel comfortable. Even a lifetime, we have that, which gives the donor access to the wolf, private tours, private time with the animals. So we count on that. As we move into the new facility is going to be able to generate more funding. One of the things we're going to be putting in eventually is a corporate center where corporations can come and pay for having retreats there, because we're going to be building, the schools want us to build facilities that are overnight and weekend facilities for the teenagers. And that's going to be built as well. So it's going to have a camp kind of opportunity for the kids and all year long, but there's also going to be an amphitheater, places for corporate retreats. So other areas to make the facility make money for us. But the programs are all paid for. That is the one thing we do. When we work with organizations, they do pay for it.
Well, before we go any further, Ken, why don't you tell people how they can do that? Do you have a website or someplace where they can connect?
If you go to wolfconnection.org, it's all there. I also recommend, we have one of the things that we do at Wolf Connection with these teenagers, Senator, is that they get a tremendous amount of vocational training in terms of construction, real job training. And one of the training opportunities they do is video making. And so if you just look on YouTube and just look at Wolf Connection on YouTube, you're going to see a ton of videos done by professionals and done by the teens themselves. And that really gives you a sense of what it's like to be around them. One of the real special things is one of the questions we always get asked is, and everybody gets asked about wolves, is the howl. Why do they howl? And the answer is very simple. Nobody really knows exactly, except that there's about 10, 15 good reasons why they howl. But because our facility is set up in a horseshoe, the kennels are set up in a horseshoe, and then in the middle of that of the compound, we have this gigantic teepee and the sitting area. And when they want, they start a howl, the howl goes around about 220 degrees, and you are surrounded with the howling of an entire pack of wolves. And
we
have a tradition there that as soon as they start, no matter what you're doing, you stop and you listen, and you just be part of the howl. It is very, very cool. And every time I've heard it for dozens and dozens of times, I still get crazy over it. And we have those videos on YouTube as well.
Well,
so
that
Ken, you mentioned earlier. Oh, go ahead, Michael.
No, go ahead. Well, I was
going to say that Ken mentioned earlier that his exposure to Wolf Connection was via his daughter, Alex. And how is it that this got on Alex's radar, Ken?
You have kids. Do you know how it gets on their radar?
She's a girl in wolves. I mean, I don't want to, you know, sound sexist here, but it's not like she's horseback riding or something.
Well, right. But she was, it's funny because she used to jump horses. But when she was about 10, she was visiting her aunt in Florida, in Naples, Florida. And there's a wolf rescue facility there. And her aunt took her there. And it was this amazing connection. She just had this insight of how to be around the animals. And she's always been interested in them. And then when we came back and she was 14, Wolf Connection, generally you had to be 18 to volunteer. But they let Alex volunteer. They let her do work. And such high school kind of took over her life, as it generally does these days. But she got me into it because I was the one driving her. So I'm always grateful for that. And hopefully one day she'll be able to get back into this on a more regular basis. But she does have that energy where she can kneel down and they will come to her. It's just within her.
Well, that's amazing. I can see why she would be fascinated by him. I told this story to Maria earlier. I went to Yellowstone Park one time on the day it opened, and I got into the park and there was a freak blizzard, so they had to shut the park down, and there were very few of us that were trapped in the park, and there were so many park rangers because they were gearing up for this season that it was an amazing experience. They took us out and they took us around, which they don't normally do, and they took us out to see a wolf. A pack of wolves.
Yeah.
And, we were at quite a distance from them, 100 yards, maybe 200 yards. But even then, just to watch them was just an amazing, exhilarating experience. And I was 18 years old, and I'll never, that was a long time ago. I don't want to tell you how long ago, and I'll never forget it. And I'd like to postulate a theory about the howling. With me, it's always involved a bottle of Jack Daniels. Now, I don't know if that has anything to do with the wolves, but it's amazing. Tell us where they stand right now. Do you know, Ken, like, are they still on the endangered species list?
Well, yeah. Yeah, we actually, let me just tell you a quick howl story, then I want to answer that question, because that's an important question you're bringing up. We had, unfortunately with all animals, you're going to lose some. And a lot of the wolves come to us in pairs where they've been together and they were rescued together, or they pair up with somebody and they become lifelong, not mates, but friends with each other. We had a situation where one of the animals lost a sibling, and every day at 2 o'clock, the wolf would start to howl and nobody else joined in until there was something in that wolf's voice after about a minute or two of grieving where they all joined in together to support the grieving. And this went on for weeks.
Wow. What a story that is.
So when people tell me they're not what they are, these are amazing animals. So about the endangered species, that's an interesting point. Fortunately, in California, we had hearings last year, a year and a half ago, and they were still on the endangered species list. There is this, again, there's this misconception about what wolves do in terms of hunting, and they do not destroy the environment. They're not poachers. They're not anything like that. I mean, yes, wolves will have the way they feed in the wild, they only eat about every 2 weeks, though, and they want to bring down something of a substantial size. And again, the intellect of the wolf coming in there is that, let's just say they take down an antelope as a pack in Canada. That antelope is, parts of the antelope are divvied up among the pack members depending upon their rank within the pack. Which part of the antelope has more nutrition will go to the alpha, but it's all divvied up that way. So it's a real family, and they really have this amazing knowledge about it. They don't eat chickens. They don't really get into, you know, people confuse them with foxes and stuff. A wolf really wants to take down a large animal because they are good hunters, but they don't enjoy the hunt as much as, they don't want to do it every day.
How do they get their prey dead? Do they go for the throat?
Oh, they're, well, yeah. Actually, I've seen... I've seen when new animals come in, well, the alpha will take one of the new, and you actually see them teaching them. They'll pick up a bone. We have a bone from their meat, and they'll hit them over the head to teach the young pup not to go close to the antelope. Let's use an antelope as an example, to the prey's feet, because they'll get kicked. So there's all kinds of system. They train each other. There's all kinds of. We actually have an alpha who will train others. And it is amazing to see them as they come in. So, no, it's really sophisticated.
That's amazing. And I can tell you, I've done work with Native Americans for many years. I trained them to run for political office through a group called Indians List. And I know that there have been big controversies in some Western states. As you've already pointed out, the Indians really revere the wolf. But yes. I know there's been big controversies with ranchers over killing wolves. And, you know, what I've always heard from the Indians is that they really are not a threat to
We don't have that
cattle.
Kind of, but here's a demonstration of the ecosystem. I was in Massachusetts a couple of summers ago, and I went to a wolf rescue facility there. Now, Massachusetts and Connecticut got rid of all their wolves several years ago. And as a result of that, they have a deer tick explosion there with Lyme disease that the CDC is saying it's costing $1 billion because the wolves were not there to control the deer population. It got out of control. The Lyme disease got out of control, and it still is out of control. So
what a great example of Mother Nature working in harmony, and then when you engage the human condition into it, it wreaks havoc.
And you know, nobody wants to picture a wolf eating Bambi. I understand that. I am the same way. But there is that natural system that they are part of the environment. Several years ago, and there's a lot more studying going on, by the way, I should bring this up. A lot of academic institutions, both here and abroad, are starting to do a tremendous amount of research because they are understanding now that the wolf needs to be studied a lot closer in terms of its environmental role as well as its societal role. It's a very important thing to understand that the wolf has actually, there was an area where the wolf changed the course of a river, and it was exactly the same thing where the deer and all the wild animals were eating so much away that a riverbank died. And so the river spread all over the place. Well, the wolves were reintroduced into that, the population of deer and such reduced, and they changed the course of the river to put it back where it should have been.
Well, you know, and that's a lesson that kids need to learn. You know, you have to teach this to children.
Right.
I've got three kids that will pontificate on global warming, and then I'll walk around the house and find every light, every TV. they understand it from a theoretical standpoint, but they really don't get it sometimes.
And I think they need that practical experience. You have to have the touch. You have to actually interact with them. And as I said, there are wolf facilities all across the country. They don't do the programs. They just do the rescue, which is wonderful. And so I've been to them in Naples, Florida, and outside of Boston, Massachusetts. And I encourage people wherever you are to find that. Because to see them, to actually be in their presence, is to begin to understand what you're dealing with here. And you know, there are so many people that I know that are real animal gurus. I mean, really people who put their entire life into rescuing. And when I bring them up to Wolf Connection, They all agree they've never seen anything like it. It's completely different than anything they've ever done.
So, Ken, well, earlier in the conversation, you mentioned that the wolves are wild and about not, you know, having your hand over their head and those sorts of things. And yet you have them in the sanctuary and you are integrating them with human nature.
Right.
How do you strike a balance with that? Do you consider them domesticated or are they wild animals that are mannered? Or what's the jargon?
To use a gun analogy, they're always loaded.
Okay.
They are brought in as rescue animals. There is a tremendous amount of effort that sometimes it will take years before we can actually have a human interaction, which is fine. I mean, what they've been through, the trauma they've been through is extraordinary. And that's fine. Sometimes it's a little bit, it goes a little bit quicker. But the concept is they're always treated as wild animals. They're treated with respect, and they know when they're being respected. They understand that. They understand when they're being disrespected as well. And so they are always considered to be wild animals. We have handlers is what they're called. And the training to become a handler, you know, minimum 6 months before you can even become a handler. People who volunteer have to understand the first couple of months you're going to be doing heavy lifting and such because the animal, it takes time. And if to get to know an animal, there are many stories of volunteers that they'll just sit in front of a kennel for a year just so the animal gets comfortable with them. And that's what it takes. Now, not every animal we bring in becomes a program animal. Some of them are just that's not what they're into, and that's fine. Keep in mind, they're going to be at Wolf Connection for life. They're going to have medical care. They're going to have outstanding food and exercise and everything for life. We don't require them to be program animals.
Well, I just think that these sorts of things are amazing, and you know, we all have a special connection, I think, with animals, especially children, and they can be such a tool. And I think the work you're doing is so great. And just on a personal note, I know that the Republicans have the elephant and the Democrats have the donkey. But if politicians really have a mascot animal, I would nominate the wolf because we're very social. We always follow the alpha. you know, and we divvy up the carcass on the basis of seniority, especially in the Senate.
That's a really good way of looking at it. Yeah, it is, and you know, the challenge in what you're saying, Senator, is that you're right. We do bring the animals to schools, but as I said at the very outset, it is an extremely time intensive process to be at a wolf rescue facility. Because they do have to be, first of all, the licensing is very, very difficult. But even then, I mean, I was in a meeting, for example, and you can appreciate this, Senator. I was in a meeting with the County of Los Angeles. We were telling them we're buying the new facility and this big thing, and we wanted to get them all together and understand that we want to do what's right. So please do tell us what you need. And there were some people that really weren't familiar with Wolf Connection and some people in the county government that looked at us. And the first thing is they said, so you bring wolves with teenagers? And that I understand when they ask that question, because that is what makes it unique. Yes, we're bringing wolves with kids that are coming out of prison or that have grown up in crack houses or have had no life whatsoever living on the streets. Yes, we are trying to do that. So it does take an enormous amount of time from the volunteers, from the staff to get the animals to that point. And of course, the compound, the ranch has to be has that personnel 24/7. There is weather to deal with. There are all kinds of issues to deal with. But if we can get more people, particularly with a new ranch, we are going to try to triple our population in a couple of years. But that means we need to triple our volunteers as well. So hopefully, we're going to do more outreach on that. But it is a very intensive commitment to be at any wolf rescue because they are wild animals. They are wolves. They are very, very smart. There are wolves that figured out how to use the lock system on their kennels. I kid you not. And they figured out.
Is that where high content and low content comes into play, Ken? Is that in terms of intelligence?
Yeah, the high content wolf, which is let's go back to that for a quick second. one of the areas that these rescues come from is that there are a few states where crossbreeding is legal. Texas and Florida are two that come to mind. And they're being sold as pets, and they're not pets. These are not pets. They're not. We've actually rescued animals from a college dormitory. These are not pets. These are animals that need to be in a pack. They're not pets to have after school. This is not the new pit bull for some reason. People think it is. So, and one of the things you look at when you're looking at the crossbreeding is high content versus low or mid content. That's basically how much of the animal is wolf, how much of the animal is dog. You identify that by behavior, by shape of their legs, more accurately by behavior, because I don't think you've ever seen a dog really pace back and forth, where that is a wolf's natural reaction to stress. A dog will retreat. A wolf will not retreat. They'll keep moving. And yes, the more wolf-like they are, we've had pure wolves, the more wolf-like they are, the more they're going to act in that manner, but also the more they're going to be successful in the healing process, because there's more of the wolf energy when they see, when they sense that something is there, a person that we've dealt with shut-ins, when they sense that the shut-in, it needs the support, they'll become that support without our encouragement at all. They have an ability to sense where the help is needed. The more wolf-like it is, the more capable they are of doing that.
I read an article not too many years ago in Smithsonian Magazine, ran an article, Ken, about a woman that runs a wolf sanctuary. I can't remember her name. You may actually know her because I think she's a retired actress. But I can't remember who it was, but they were talking about the fact that they had taken wolves out of Manhattan apartments.
Oh yeah,
you know, and people just looked at them as designer pets and didn't really understand their behavior. The one incident I remember is a woman that had all her furniture ripped up by the wolf while she was at work because they said wolves are foragers, among other things, and they didn't understand that.
We had one that actually just tore through the sheetrock. And just to get out, because they wanted to find a pack to be with. This lone wolf does not exist. The lone wolf that you'll see in the media is such a unique experience. It almost never happens. But you've got this unfortunate term lone wolf that comes with gunmen and mass murderers and such. Mm-hmm. The wolf is a very social creature. They do need to be in their pack. They do need to have a social interaction among themselves. It's a very, very structured world they live in, and they need to have that structure.
Hey, Ken, is there an opportunity for them to procreate?
Not at the ranch. No, they're all spayed and neutered before they come to the ranch.
Okay, no, so they're not populating the planet.
No, they're not populating the planet. We're not involved in that. But one of the interesting things that is that our founder Teo Alfaro, who's the guy behind Wolf Connection, and his wife, Renee, who was one of the original volunteers, they have a baby. And you talk about being raised by wolves. Their baby is being raised by wolves. And it's going to be really interesting to watch that over the years, because the animals began to adopt the baby when Renee was pregnant. And you know, they knew not to roughhouse around her. They understood that immediately. And now that the baby's about a year and a half, it's really part of the pack. So that's going to be interesting to see that. I always enjoy watching that interaction. I want to talk about one more thing about the new ranch, if I could brag about it. Because one of the things we want to do about the environment, first of all, we're going to be going with solar energy at every opportunity. Now that's by need also, because we're not off the grid, but we don't want to have to deal with the grid. We're also going to be developing organic gardens. The goal is that we can feed our own staff with a lot of the vegetables that we work, and that'll be part of the vocational training. Everything is going to have a green component to it. You can't deal with wolves and then not look at your environment. It is critical that we deal with it that way, particularly in California, where water is such an issue and power is such an issue. It's very, and but this is how we're going to be these are going to be incredible life skills for these kids that are coming out of this, that are coming out of the prisons and their programs, to learn about the opportunities. And you talk about this, I know, all the time, Senator. The green world offers tremendous employment opportunities. So they're going to be at the real foundation of that, having the skills necessary.
Well, so, and this is a major lesson. I'm sorry?
Go ahead.
This is a major lesson, Ken, that needs to be taught, because this is the challenge for our children. We've abused the planet for 1,000 years, and these young people are going to have to deal with it.
Yeah.
So developing a respect for nature and for the interdependence of every part of nature is, I think, critical to the future development, safe development of the world. And I'm so happy that programs, creative programs like this, are out there, and that you're teaching kids this lesson, because respect, and especially respect for animals. You know, it's funny that I read an article one time where they found out that in research of serial killers, that serial killers very often abuse animals as children.
And like, Senator, that actually is dark. I'll share with you something on that. That is how my brother, who was a gang prosecutor here in L.A., created the largest animal cruelty prosecution unit in the country. Was he was able to prove to his bosses that they need to have a special unit for animal cruelty, and that's what they did. So you're right. It's all very well connected. It's all integrated. You know, this is when Tayo started Wolf Connection, the whole global environment. He was a hiking tour guide around the world. He's a very nature guy. And so this really is a core component. Where we are right now, in fact, we're off the grid. We have no electricity off the grid. We have no plumbing off the grid. The new facility was going to have that. Fortunately, we can kind of get rid of the porta potties after several years. But it is about teaching people when they come there that it's that line that you see in parks, you know, take only photographs and leave only footprints.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, Ken, you were founded in 2009, right as the economy had tanked and was turning. So I know you can donate, as you mentioned. I know you can sponsor a Wolf. You can start a campaign, but you have a couple of events, don't you, that raise money for the Wolf Connection?
Right, and that's what the community hikes are, one of those events where we do this almost every month, where you come up and it is an opportunity for you to donate, because we do get a sense, Maria, that when people have the interaction with the animals, that's when they really begin to understand it. You know, we are getting more involved in special events, but because the new ranch is taking so much time of building all the kennels and everything, we're allowing other people. In fact, there's an event coming up that Charlie Nee, who played Dr. Park on House MD, one of my very favorite TV shows, is doing a benefit art show in LA for us. But the best thing to do is to come to the ranch if you're in California. If not, look at what's on the website. We're developing new opportunities all the time. And, you know, if that's something that interests you, there are tremendous opportunities for you in the Adopt-A-Wolf program to really get to know the animal that you're supporting. It's, you know, I supported an animal. I supported Chance, who's Chance and his brother Coda came from Alaska. They were abused to the point of criminal activity, and to get them to the point that it took Chance about 2 years to really feel 100% comfortable where he is right now. His brother's still struggling with that, and that's okay. That's part of the trauma. I want to bring up one thing that makes it about the program that I should have talked about earlier. All right, so let's look at the teen program, for example. The teen program, so let's just say we're dealing with 20 students that are coming here from this expulsion high school. We do not care about their stories. We don't listen to their stories about their life and their upbringing. That's not our problem. We are not social workers. What we do is we tell them all the stories of the animals, and we find over time they will identify with one or more of the animals for what could happen, and that's how they make that connection. There was a young girl who was there, a short, kind of stout young woman. And she turned 18, she graduated, and we interviewed her and asked her, you know, who was, did she make a connection with any of the animals? And she mentioned one of the animals that, ironically, we have rescued these two wolves who were being fed to death, literally fed to death with candy and stuff, which is going to kill the animal immediately. So she said that's the one she identified with. And I assume that was because she probably has a little, you know, weight issue or something. So I said, what was that reason? And it wasn't that. She said, because the owner of the wolf, in order to keep the wolf from escaping, was feeding the animal candy and cookies and cake. And my dad, in order to keep me from running away from the house, fed me crack cocaine every day.
Oh, my goodness.
My God.
Oh, dear Lord.
Well, and that's, Ken, you're obviously doing amazing work. Maria and I have a few other things we want to talk about. So please come back so
whenever
we can have another conversation about this. But before you leave, give people your website again.
Sure.
And if you send us information about your events, we will post them on the show's website so that anybody that wants information can go to bbsradio.com and look up our show and get the information. But tell us one more time.
Sure. The website is wolfconnection.org. And all you have to do is Google Wolf Connection. We're all over. We're very Googlicious.
All right. Good.
And I encourage
people
to look
up some of those wolf videos.
That's correct. You'll find you'll find them everywhere.
Thank you, Ken Ferber, so much for joining us and for what you're doing for not only the wolf population but our at-risk population. It's a win-win-win, which is the best of all concerns.
Thank you very much. I'm all choked up now. Thank you very much.
For clumped.
Okay, thank you.
Goodbye, Ken. Thank you.
We're gonna take a short break here and play a classic song by Warren Zevon. And this goes out to Ken Ferber and all the wonderful people in his organization, and to Chance. We'll be back in a minute. And we're back with Maria Sanchez. And the first thing I want to talk about is I went to the Republican convention, Maria, which we had a caucus here for the first time in the District of Columbia instead of a primary for the Republicans, because our Board of Elections is so messed up that they put the primary, the Democratic primary now. It used to be we used to have the primary on the same day, but they made it so close to the Republican convention that the Republicans had to move it back, move their election back. So they had a primary yesterday, and I swear to you, I've never seen that many people lined up in the District of Columbia in all my life. And they haven't come up with the figures, but I bet 10,000 people voted in that primary.
You're saying 10,000 Republican Washingtonians?
Yeah. 10,000 Republican Washingtonians, at least, who waited in line for hours, even in the rain, because they only had six machines. They could only vote six at a time. And, I mean, they were around the block twice. Now, in a regular primary, you know, they would open many polling places. But this was held by the Republican Party in a hotel because of a screw-up by the Board of Elections. I call it a screw-up. The Board of Elections probably wouldn't. But because of that, the Republican Party put on their own primary. They put on caucuses for the first time. And it was amazing to see how many people showed up. And as far as I'm concerned, that's always the true lifeblood of democracy, people that come out and vote and participate.
Absolutely.
In one
and
form
so, Michael, you
or
think
another.
That yesterday's attendance was unprecedented?
Unprecedented, I would
really?
Say. Now, it's hard to establish that because there are probably that many people that have voted in primaries in the past for the Republicans. But I would say there's never been a primary where they've had to literally wait in line for hours to cast a vote. In those other primaries, you know, you would walk in and walk out, especially as a Republican, because 70% of the voters in District Columbia are Democrats. So it would have been normally a very easy process, but this was a very difficult process, and none of them gave up. They said, no, I'm here, I'm going to cast my vote, and I think that's amazing. And we saw Rubio won, Kasich and Cruz. I can't remember which one came out on top, but whoever came in second only came out by 1 percentage point. So they were in a virtual tie, and Trump did very, very poorly. And I don't know if that's an indication of things to come.
I know what you say is true, because it was Rubio and then Kasich. And so it seems everyone keeps giving Trump all this credit for energizing the voters or the electorate or people to register and stuff like that. But that would be a non-issue with the results yesterday.
Well, I don't know. Maybe he did energize. Maybe he energized the Rubio and Kasich voters to come out. You know, I mean, yeah. I guess it's the way you look at it. You know, maybe he's energized the anti-Trump vote instead of the pro-Trump vote. And, you know, I would only add to that as a caveat that Republicans in Washington are pretty liberal. They're socially liberal. They're the Republicans I remember as a kid who are fiscally conservative, who want limits on government, who prize personal freedoms, things like that. That's really their agenda. Socially, some of the issues that Trump's got into, I would say most Washington Republicans, obviously from the results, don't agree with. They're pretty socially liberal. So
that's how I am. I mean, that describes me to a T, which is, and some of my friends who have an R behind their name are like, you're so liberal. How can you be called a Republican? And I said, because socially, I don't think government should be involved. You know, it's fiscally that I want to have less and, you know, more entrepreneurs and more celebrating the independence. And, you know, and of course, if somebody needs help, they deserve help. But I also like the adage about better to teach someone to fish than to keep giving them fish.
Right.
And
right.
And so that's I think all social programs have a reason, or else they wouldn't be there, but don't make them a lifestyle.
Well, you know, and if you remember from our show where we had the two kids on, the Democrat and the Republican, uh-huh, Diego, said exactly that. And you know, and I keep on thinking to myself, this is really the hope of the Republican Party, and my hope is that they don't drive these people away, because that's what Diego said. I don't care who you marry. I don't care, you know, what you do in your personal life. What I care about are these other things, freedom, liberty, you know, all the other issues that you just mentioned. And I've got to be honest with you, Maria. Well, you're socially liberal, and that's one of the reasons that I adore you. But also, I've been a Democrat all my life from day one. But I'll be the first one to tell you that a country full of Democrats without any Republicans would not be any better than a country full of Republicans without any Democrats. The balance of power that our government was set up on, we also need in our politics. We need the Republican and the Democratic Party to both be healthy. And if they're not, I think we all suffer.
I agree with you. And that's when, I mean, I guess you could say that's why we need diversity. So not just in politics, yes, but in life and in the boardroom and in Hollywood. And, you know, that's what makes us stronger, is not homogenization, but diversity. So, and that's true of the human spirit too. you know, how and even dogs that we were speaking about, the breeders end up breeding these animals that they don't have immune systems like they once did. They don't even have the brains like they once did. They say the collies are being bred so that their snout is longer and more finer. It's incapacitating the space cavity for the brain so that their brains are having to become smaller because the overall bone structure is smaller.
Well, maybe that's what is happening in Congress on both sides. We're breeding the wrong kind of politicians, and their brain cavities are getting smaller. But yeah, you know, that's one of the reasons we have this deadlock. Because I think there was a time where, you know, you had, you know, I'll just give you a couple of examples of Republicans, people like Barry Goldwater, who I generally did not agree with, but I respected. I mean, because he was true to his beliefs, and you know, I think we're losing that. I think we're all looking at our Twitter feeds to see what our position should be, and we can't agree with each other because you know, we're more interested in being popular than we're interested in being true to our values.
Well, and you know what's funny for me is Friday night I was with my three sons who are going to vote for Bernie Sanders. Last night I was with my two girlfriends who are Democrats. Tonight I'm with my girlfriend and her husband who are both Democrats. We are civilized. We're respectful. We have intelligent and passionate exchanges, but there is no denunciation. There's no yelling. There's no putting down. Sometimes we agree to disagree. I don't know why more of us can't do that.
Well, because obviously I would answer that question as these are your children and your friends, so they respect you. And that's the area that we're falling down, is we don't respect each other enough. And with that, we've got to go because
Thank
we're
you.
Out of time.
Have a great week, everybody. Thanks for your ears.
Yes, and I want to let you have the last word because I certainly respect you, my Republican
friend. I just would like to say, please vote. Super Tuesday is coming up a day after tomorrow. It matters. Whatever your opinion is, make it be heard.
Absolutely. And that's a great way to end. Thank you.
Thank you.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.